So we moved from the depot to Lehi. We couldn't find a place to rent in Lehi, and Grandpa Poole loaned us $1,000 for a down payment, and we bought a home on 3rd West, 798 North 3rd West, as I remember the address. A two-bedroom, bathroom, kitchen and living room upstairs, and an open basement downstairs. We paid $4,800 for the house and put the $1,000 down. I don't remember what the monthly payment was. And then I went to work for Orville Gunther as a sheet metal worker, installing furnaces, air conditioners most of the time, but did work on water heaters, stoves, ranges, and special sheet metal work. The home in Lehi had a large garden space, but there was no garage. I subsequently laid down a cement floor to build a garage, but we actually moved to Sandy before I got a garage built. I did do some remodeling in the house. I built in some bookcases. And this was a house in a subdivision. All the houses were alike. And many of the people in the subdivision, when they saw my bookcases, did the same thing in their home. There was a little niche in the hall, small hall. The bookcase just fit in perfectly. And so many of the people copied my bookcase idea. The home originally had a coal-fired furnace. And I got busy working for Gunther's and sold enough people on the street to change to gas that the gas company ran a gas line up our street, and I pulled out the coal furnace and installed a gas furnace. It was a coal-fired furnace. It was not a stoker where you could fill a bin and have the stoker fire the furnace automatically. We had to build a fire with paper and kindling and then put little pieces of coal in to begin with, and then we put the bigger pieces of coal in. In the wintertime, of course, you kept the fire burning all the time. In the spring and fall, when it was fairly warm in the daytime, you could allow the fire to go out, and then in the evening start a fire. When we had a fire in the furnace, it would heat our water. When we didn't have a fire in the furnace, the water was heated electrically, which was very expensive. So I was very happy to get the gas and put in a gas furnace and a gas water heater. We did have a nice large garden. We raised vegetables of several kinds. We had some raspberries and some strawberries, and every year we were there, we had a garden. We had a gardener that lived across the fence from us. He was in the stake presidency. His last name was Jones, and I can't think of his first name. I think it was Frank Jones. Anyway, he and his wife became very good friends, and he was a expert gardener. He was quite a bit older than we were, and he'd give us hints, and he'd help us. We did have real nice gardens while we were there. We had some neighbors across the street by the name of Powell, Wayne and Norma Powell, and they became very good friends. And Wayne was also a good gardener, and he helped me with it. Norma and Viv became very good friends. We lived in the Lehi 3rd Ward, and at the time we were meeting in an old chapel. It was not adequate, and during our time in Lehi, the 3rd Ward built a new chapel. In those days, the chapel was built by the members of the ward. The church would finance, as I recall, 40% of the cost. Maybe it was 60% in the ward 40, but it seems to me the ward had to put up 60% of the cost, and the church would put up 40%. Now, part of that ward cost could be made by contributed labor. And I remember very well carrying wheeling buckets of cement for foundations and for floors, for walls. And I remember working on the roof. I remember working on the grounds, getting ready for the landscaping. And it was a beautiful, nice new building, and of course, it's still being used. As a matter of fact, I understand now there are two wards in that building. As near as Becky and I can figure out, the chapel would have been built in 49 or 50, because I know we hadn't been in it very long when we moved to Sandy. And Bradley was born just before we moved to Sandy also. We had some great friends in Lehigh. Lehigh put on a rodeo every summer in recognition of the Lehigh history, and that was a fun thing to take part in. They had a children's parade along with the celebration of the rodeo, and we would decorate wagons and buggies and strollers and take our children in this children's parade. I remember doing that several years. I don't remember what kind of decorations we had or what we did, but I remember taking part in the parade. One thing that was fun for me as far as the Lehigh Third Ward was concerned was the Lehigh Third Ward had a contender in church athletics. No matter what the sport, Lehigh Third Ward was a contender. We won most of the league contests we were in. We won in basketball and we won in softball. Golf and tennis I didn't participate in, so I don't know what happened. But most of the time, Viv would stay home with the children because the games would be late at night. When we had an early game, Viv and the children would come down and they'd watch the game, children would play around, and that was always nice. But this one time we had a late game, and I had driven down alone, and Viv had gotten the children all asleep, and she walked down to the ballpark, and she got down there just as the game was ending. So she climbed in the car and laid down in the back seat. I came and got in the car, sat on the seat and took my spikes off and put my regular shoes on. And your mother yelled boo and grabbed me from the back, and I just about went through the ceiling of that car. She really did scare me. I remember the year that we won the league, the Sandy War, Sandy Stake Championship. We went to the region championship and we played for the region championship. We were one of the two teams playing, and the it turned out that Vineyard from the Provo area and Lehigh Third Ward were going to play for the region championship. The winner, of course, got to go to the all-church tournament. And I would really like to go to the all-church tournament. And we had a real good game. And it came down to the last inning, and we had the last bats. We were behind one run. And we had a men on third and men on second. And there were two out, and I came up to bat. I hit the hardest ball I have ever hit in all of my softball, baseball experience. But I hit it directly at the third baseman's face. And he just, in a reflex action, threw his glove up in front of his face to protect himself as he ducked away, and he caught the ball for the final out, and we lost the region championship. Now, what's really interesting about that is that years later, when I was working for Aetna Finance Company and in charge of business promotion for the Aetna Finance Company in Utah and Montana, I was on a business trip to Montana, and I can't remember which of the cities I covered that this man lived in, but it was in the summertime, and they were talking. I went to church because I was there over a weekend, and they were talking about their softball team and that they had won the city league that they had played in, but there was one team that they had were really competitors, really rivals. And in the course of the league, they had each won one game. Each had beat the other team once. And they were planning on a playoff game to see which one was the best team. It had nothing to do with the league it was over with. But everybody was concerned about having officials that wouldn't be prejudiced, because their officials there had been doing all their games all year. So at that time, I was a certified ASA official. That's American Softball Association official. And I volunteered to officiate their game for them. And so we got talking, and it turned out the captain of this ward's team was the third baseman that I had hit that ball to in the Provo Region Finals that kept us out of the All-Church Tournament. To get back to Lehigh, I played on the ward basketball team, and the fourth ward team had a player by the name of LeVar Bateman. I didn't pay any particular attention to LeVar or anybody else on the other team. I was trying to play as well as I could for my team. And so after, I think, two winters of playing basketball, LeVar Bateman was called to be the Stake MIA president. And he asked for me to be his second counselor. I couldn't even remember who LeVar Bateman was. I had no idea. But I accepted, of course, and met him and met the first counselor, whose name I don't remember. And we had a really good MIA program. The young women's presidency was very cooperative. We worked together, and we really had a good program. And LeVar Bateman and I became good friends. So when it came deer hunting season, LeVar and I went deer hunting together. Oh, and incidentally, in the deer hunting stories, I mentioned the fact that LeVar and I were hunting, and I was answering a call to Mother Nature when I shot at a deer, and it scared it and ran it over to LeVar, who shot it. After I told this story on the deer hunting tape, I remembered that when we were skinning the deer, we found that I had shot through the tail. The tail of the deer was just hanging, as my shot had just gone through the tail. No wonder it was running fast. But I got acquainted with LeVar, and LeVar and I have been very good friends ever since. And we've been hunting together and really enjoyed each other's company. It's while we were living in Lehigh that Vivian earned her Golden Gleaner Award and I earned the Master M-Man Award. And I don't remember what all the requirements were, but it was a prestigious award. We were very pleased to be able to earn that award. And thinking about it, the requirements covered several years or a lot of time. Our missions counted as points toward the award. The program was a church program for young men and young women in the MIA. It had no connection with Sunday school or other church programs. It was strictly an MIA program for young women and young men. I know you got points for having field missions, which we had done, for speaking in church, for teaching classes, any other church positions you might have held would count towards it. I still got the letter that the MIA church presidency sent me when I received the award as a Master M-Man. I still have my pin. I had it made into a tie tack, and I wear it all the time. And every once in a while, somebody will come up to me and recognize it, accuse me of bragging about how old I am because I identifying my age with that pin. One of our neighbors was a owner of a local sporting goods store. I went into the sporting goods store, talked to Harold Hutchings, and he said he had a good sale on Winchester 12-gauge pump shotguns. And I didn't own a shotgun at the time. I owned my deer rifle, but I borrowed Grandpa Poole's double-gauge shotgun. So I would like to have a shotgun, but I didn't have enough money to buy it. But Harold offered to put it on layaway for me, and I'd never even heard of layaway at that time. But he explained, and I'd put something down and put something on it each month or each week when I got paid, whatever, until it was paid for. So I decided to do that, and I should have told Vivian about it, but I guess I was a little bit embarrassed about buying a shotgun when we didn't have any more money than we did. Anyway, it was coming hunting season. My birthday was coming up. And so Viv had saved up some money that she hadn't told me about and went down to Harold Hutchins and picked out a shotgun for me. It wasn't the shotgun that I wanted, that I had put away. And Harold, realizing the situation, didn't say anything about me having put one in layaway. So Viv bought the shotgun and brought it home, and I got it for my birthday. And I was really pleased, a little bit embarrassed. So I didn't think that Vivian would know the difference between one shotgun and another. So I took the shotgun down and traded it for the one I wanted, and had to pay a little bit extra because the one I wanted was a more expensive gun. And I took it home and put it with the other guns. Sure enough, Viv noticed that that wasn't the gun she'd bought, so it all came out what I'd been doing. I think it was a good lesson for both of us on communicating. One thing that happened when we lived in Lehi that I've had real regrets about since was at our state conference, a Sunday evening meeting was an MIA conference meeting, and it was my turn to conduct. And so, because it was my turn, I asked my uncle, George Albert Smith, who was president of the church, if he'd come down and speak at our meeting. And he agreed to do it. And boy, it was the best attended MIA conference meeting we've ever had. And we gave, we went through the meeting, and after the meeting was over, Uncle George and his secretary, whose name I can't remember, stopped at our house on their way home and came in and visited with us. And we had a nice visit with them, and then they went on to Salt Lake. And ever since that time, I've thought, what a stupid fool I was not to ask him to give us a blessing as a family. And I know he would have done it if I'd have just asked, and I could really kick myself that I didn't think about it then. I've surely thought about it since. No, he didn't. My work at Lehi was with Orville Gunther at Gunther Sheet Metal in American Fork, and I was working as a mechanic, installing the equipment. And one day, Mr. Gunther and I were hammering a Pittsburgh seam together. We were rushing to get a job done, and so he was helping out in the shop. And he said to me, "Glenn, did you enjoy tracking when you were on your mission?" And I said, "Well, I don't think it was my favorite thing to do, but I didn't mind it. Many times I enjoyed it, yes." And he said, "Well, Glenn, this business is getting too big for me to handle by myself, and I'm thinking of hiring a salesman. And I'd like somebody from in the business. And I've thought about it a lot, and I think you would be our best choice for a salesman. Would you like to do that?" And I thought about it. told him I think I would like to do it, but I'd like to talk to Vivian first about it. And so he said, well, think about it. Let me know in a day or two. So I went home after work and talked to Viv about it. We decided the possibilities for increased income were better in sales field than in the shop. So I told Orville that I would like to give it a try if I could go back in the shop if it didn't work out. And he said, well, of course, you're a good mechanic. If it doesn't work out, you can come back in the shop. So I took the job as salesman. Now, in order to be a salesman, I had to have a car, and I didn't have a car. Grandpa Poole had loaned me $1,000 to buy the house, and so my dad loaned me $1,000 to buy a car. And the first car was a Ford coupe. There was a small back seat. It was just a small car, but it worked out all right. The children were all small. They fit in it. And we didn't have seat belts or carriers in those days. But so I had a car, and I worked as a salesman. And it worked out really well. I was really making good money because the gas company was expanding so rapidly. The war had been a freeze on gas. You couldn't put in gas mains. You couldn't sell your gas to people who didn't have it. So the gas company had just been standing still all during the war years. But now they were expanding rapidly, and they expanded too fast. After about 3 years as a salesman, the gas company had reached a point where they didn't have gas sufficient to maintain the reserves necessary and required by law. So they put a freeze on selling new gas equipment. You couldn't sell gas furnaces, water heaters, stoves, anything. You couldn't add any gas equipment, and it was really rough. That meant the only thing we could sell was coal furnaces and stokers and oil furnaces. Now, the coal furnace market was nil. Nobody wanted to put in coal that time. And the oil furnace was only appropriate in very rural areas where there was no chance of gas lines ever coming. And so we did sell a few oil furnaces, but not enough that I could live on it. There wasn't enough commission. I wasn't selling enough to the commissions would pay our family expenses. So at that time, a friend of mine had been in the Army with me, whose name again I don't remember, recommended me to Sterling Sill to be a New York Life Insurance salesman. And Sterling Sill contacted me, and I went to Salt Lake for an interview, and I was impressed with the possibilities of the insurance business. I talked to Orville about it, and he understood the situation, but he was hurting too. He wasn't making any money, and so I resigned and went into the life insurance business. But I'd like to put in the record at this point that Orville Gunther has been one of my best friends. I look at him as a second father. He's just been a great friend all my life, after I first met him, of course. Just to illustrate the kind of man that Orville is, there was a retired school teacher in Lehigh by the name of Anderson. And they were elderly people, but the gas went down their street, and so I sold them a gas floor furnace and a gas range to cook on, eliminating the need for any fires in their home, and a gas water heater, so they didn't have to worry about coal and building fires. And they paid a little down payment, and they were paying it on a contract so much a month. And it was a 2-year contract, And 4 months into the contract, Brother Anderson died of a sudden heart attack. He had been making the payments by selling blankets, Utah Woolen Mills blankets. He would travel around selling these blankets, and that's the way he was making the payments on his equipment. And when he died, I worried about it. I didn't know if he had any insurance. I didn't know what Sister Anderson would do to make the payments. And I thought about it and thought about it for several days. And finally, I went down to see her. And I told her how sorry I was about Brother Anderson's death. But I was really concerned about the contract. Was there something that could be done? Did he have insurance enough to pay it off? Or I'd even be willing to help if I could. What was the situation? And she said, well, let me show you. And she went to her desk and brought out an invoice from Gunther's. And it read, listed the equipment and the amount of money and the total and the down minus the down payment minus the payments that had been made and gave the balance. And then written in Orville Gunther's handwriting was paid in full, signed Orville Gunther. And this is only one of the things that he done like that. I know of several others where he very quietly and secretly, he hoped nobody would know about, helped people. As a matter of fact, when our electric range blew up, I picked out one of the gas ranges from the shop and installed it in our house, and I talked to Orville about it, and he said, well, it would be X number of dollars, which was a substantial discount, but before I could make the first payment on it, he told me it was a gift. After about 6, 7, 8, 9 months in the insurance business in Lehigh and vicinity, I found out I was making more sales in Salt Lake County and Sandy area and in Salt Lake than I was in Utah County, Lehigh area. So we decided to move. We found a place in Sandy that for $9,000. We sold our home in Lehigh for $6,000. Bought this home in Sandy. Had 2 bedrooms, 3 bedrooms, a small bathroom, 2 floor furnaces, a living room, dining room, and a kitchen, a large kitchen. 244 North 5th East, Sandy address at that time. The addresses have now been changed so that it's a county address now, not a, at least it was. I don't know what's happened. It's been a long time. But we had 1.25 acres of ground. The house was on the 1/4 acre, had big lawns, trees. It was an old house. Matter of fact, it was the first house built in Sandy that had a concrete foundation. Any home in Sandy still standing, older than our home, had a rock and mortar foundation. So and the ceilings were 11 feet high. It was an old home. Over the years, there was a lot of remodeling done. We moved to Sandy in 1951, shortly after Bradley was born. Immediately started making some changes in the house. As a matter of fact, as I recall now, we had the kitchen remodeled, hired it done before we ever moved in because it was so inadequate. We bought a new gas stove for it and had it remodeled. So we had a real nice kitchen, and that was the best part of the house. After living there, we had a nice garden with an acre in the back. We never did cultivate the whole thing, but we had a nice big garden and all kinds of vegetables, and raspberries and strawberries. We planted a lot of flowers around the house, and we really had a nice garden. There was a wood garage without a door on it, back of the house. And there was a chicken coop back of the house. The garage we used mostly for storage. I don't ever remember putting the car in it. We did pay to have a concrete driveway put in with a large block of concrete in the back where I put up a basketball standard. We had room to have family basketball games out and back. And we did have a lot of good basketball games. It was a fun thing to do with the children. As a matter of fact, when Daryl was on his mission, Bradley beat me. He was the first of my children to beat me in a one-on-one game. And as soon as the game was over, he'd made the last basket. He ran in the house and said, "Mom, give me a pencil and paper. I've got to write to Daryl in the mission field and tell him I beat Dad in basketball." And I don't remember what years that was, but I do remember that's what happened. Now, why I remember this, I haven't the faintest idea, and it's of no consequence whatsoever, but I remember one day sitting in the kitchen around the table, and we're all having our dinner together, as we did almost every night, and Viv would say, "We'll take turns, everybody tell the best thing that happened to them that day." And I remember we did that frequently. Your mother would ask for that question, and we would all have to tell the best thing that happened. But the thing that I remember that is funny that I remember is one day we all sat down, said the blessing, and Becky picked up her glass of milk and took a sip. She said, "Oh, this milk is sour." I said, "It can't be sour. It's fresh. I just got it." I took a sip of milk. I said, "It was sour. It was really bad." Why I wouldn't believe Becky, I don't know, but I didn't, but she was sure right. Before we moved in, we were working on the house in Sandy, driving back and forth. And always take the whole family, of course. I don't remember what I was working on, except I was sawing some lumber, and the children were gathering the sawdust off the cement underneath the sawhorse. And I don't know what they were doing with it, but they were playing with it. And Sue came up from behind me just as I pushed down on the saw, and she tried to wipe the sawdust off the board I was cutting. And I cut off the first two fingers of her right hand between the second and third knuckles. And as long as I live, I'll never forget those severed fingers rolling down that board. That brought the work to a halt that day. We rushed her to a doctor. I felt badly. And we were doing it on a Sunday, which I should have known better. You don't do things like that on Sunday. And what added to the pain was the fact that in order that the doctor could properly treat the amputation was he had to cut off more finger bone so that he could make a pad of flesh at the end of the finger. And so that made her fingers even shorter. And I've certainly regretted that all of my life. And Sue has been an absolute brick about it. It's not stopped her from doing anything she wanted to do, including art. She's creative. She sews. She's done all kinds of things with her hands. At first, Sue was quite bashful about her hand and would hide it in the folds of her skirt or put it behind her. Came time when Daryl and Diane took Sue to school with them for that day. And Sue was doing the same thing. She was hiding a hand that had been hurt. And a boy in the class finally noticed the hand and spoke right up and said, "Hey, look, Sue's had a couple of fingers cut off," or something else. I don't know. Anyway, he brought attention to the fact. And Sue immediately sat on her hand. But the teacher, and Becky and I think it was Beth Hermanson, called Sue up in front and had her show the hand to the class and tell them what happened. She brought it out in the open. She talked about it. She got Sue to talk about it. And that's the last time Sue's ever tried to hide that hand. And I have been forever grateful to the teacher for understanding how to handle that situation. Time and time again, I've apologized to Sue and told her how badly I feel about it. She said, "It doesn't bother me, Dad. I can do fine." Becky tells me, and I had completely forgotten this, that when we got home to Lehigh that night, the home teachers came to visit. We may have called them. I don't know either. But anyway, they came, and they gave Sue a blessing. And Becky was so upset about it that they gave Becky a blessing also. And I had completely forgotten that, and I really appreciate her reminding me that happened.